In the criminal justice system, the people are represented by two separate yet equally important groups, the police who investigate crime and the district attorneys who prosecute the offenders. These are their stories.
You know, I think that the two sides are actually motivated here to get this done. Does it get done before the draft? That's just unclear. But I do think that ultimately, I think Klay Thompson will end up being in the deal.
All rise. Welcome to Basketball Court, the only court in which the topic of conversation is basketball. Unless you're Thapocephalosha. Welcome, everyone. My name is Peter Andrews. I'm the judge here in the U.S. District Court for the District of Basketball. We are back after a long, definitely planned hiatus to give you some more hot takes and general nuttery about what-ifs of basketball. I'm joined tonight by our two counselors, as always. I'd like to welcome back two-time winner Miles Johnson.
Oh, I like that two-time winner at the beginning. That felt good. Does that feel good for anybody else?
Probably not for Sam. But we will welcome back defending champion and probably the longest holder of the belt thus far, because he's had it unchallenged for about 8 months, Sam Tydings.
Yeah, it's a lot easier to hold on to that when you're not actually competing on a biweekly basis, but I'm glad we can come back like some sort of British TV show that takes 2 years off and then it's season two.
Yeah, you're like the Floyd Mayweather of this, you know.
That's right.
Not you a win comparison. Embracing.
Only in the sense that you could win and then take, you know, 9 months off with your hundreds of millions of dollars. There's actually no money on the line in Basketball Court. I realize, you know, many of our listeners have asked us, what are we playing for here? And the answer is, of course, bragging rights.
Yeah. And after that, just absolutely nothing.
More or less.
I could take Miles in a fight, I think. Going back to the Mayweather thing.
We'll adjudicate that on the next episode.
Yeah, we'll go to Temkila in the next episode, and we'll have a real fight. But first, let's get to today's topic at hand. Just to set the stage again, as you know, we talk in Basketball Court about the moments where the fate of the NBA changed forever. In this case, it's more of a moment that didn't happen. You can take a listen to our audio drop.
Love picks up Curry. Curry steps back, fakes a three, drives again, shut off nicely, found a Green, seven to shoot. Curry fakes the three, steps back, crossover, puts up a three. Rebound of James with 30 seconds remaining.
That's right. Kevin Love was, as you all know, almost traded to the Golden State Warriors in 2014, right before the decision part two, and LeBron returned to Cleveland. It's a decision that we believe would have some pretty intriguing ramifications upon the modern NBA. You'd have Klay Thompson ending up in Minnesota, along with a bunch of other spare parts that we'll get to. And our two counselors will present their arguments as to how our modern world would be different had this trade actually gone down. So before we get started, I will ask Sam, as the defending champion, to call it in the air. I have a coin here. Ready?
I'm going to go tails never fails.
It is tails. You get to either go first or defer.
I am going to defer because I've seen Miles' argument in the amicus brief, and it was quite interesting, and I would like him to share it with the world first.
All right, so Counselor Miles, you're up. Let's hear it. What would have happened if that trade had gone down?
So I won't get into the nitty-gritty just yet. The big picture here is that if this trade goes down, it totally alters the landscape of California basketball as we know it. The only problem is not for Bay Area fans. Unfortunately, the biggest winner if this trade goes down is Steve Ballmer and the Los Angeles Clippers, who in their franchise-long title drought and really sort of propel the LA Clippers as not just a title winner and a sort of now perennial, I guess I should say, great in terms of their franchise, but also like the face of Los Angeles basketball.
So what you're saying is that you think that the Clippers win the championship instead of the Warriors.
Right. I think that if this trade goes down, it doesn't really do enough for any of the other teams that would be involved, right? It doesn't do enough for Minnesota, obviously. I don't think it improves Golden State. In fact, I think from what we've seen and from what I'm projecting, it makes them worse. And even other teams that are sort of tangentially affected, which we'll get to, teams like Cleveland, Oklahoma, nobody wins as much as the Clippers would if Kevin Love gets traded from the Wolves to the Warriors.
Okay, so walk me through this team by team. So the Warriors are the first team that they get. They're getting Kevin Love. They don't have Klay Thompson anymore. What you don't think the Warriors win the championship?
I don't. So the first thing, and this is the biggest thing I think to sort of think about, is that if this trade goes down, Draymond Green never becomes Draymond Green as we know him. Everybody, I think, is aware of the fact that when Mark Jackson was the head coach of this team, before he was replaced by Steve Kerr, that he only played Draymond about 21, 22 minutes a night. Steve Kerr comes in, and because David Lee gets hurt in that preseason before their 67 win season, that was 2014-2015, he upped that from 21.9 to 31.5 minutes a game. Really, the rest of that from there is pretty much history. He is their best defender. Steph Curry relies heavily on him as he's a much more efficient shooter. He shoots more threes, scores more points than Draymond's on the floor versus when they're not. The Warriors are a better both offensive and defensive team in terms of points scored and points let up each game when Draymond's on the floor. If Kevin Love's that primary power forward, he never gets that chance to get off the bench. Again, assuming everyone stays healthy. Obviously, David Lee going down is the only reason that we know about Draymond now. Had David Lee stayed healthy, there's not as great of a chance that he would have sort of blossomed into the all-star that he is now. With that being said, Steph and Draymond too, really the entire team, also benefit immensely from the spacing that Klay Thompson would have provided. And as great as Kevin Martin is, and as great as the 13th pick who they would have gotten back, I'm not even sure it would have been Zach LaVine, who it was in real life. There's no replacing Klay Thompson. If you don't believe me, go back and watch that video of his 37-point quarter against Sacramento from a couple years back. Without Klay Thompson and without Draymond Green, you see what I'm saying? Like, now we've gotten to a point at which Steph Curry is really the lone playmaker, the lone sort of offensive weapon on this team. It looks a lot more like Steph Curry, Kevin Martin, I guess Harrison Barnes, Kevin Love, and Andrew Bogut. And while I think Kevin Love...
That sounds like a really underwhelming team.
And it's not one that would have won 67 games in that 2014-2015 season, and it's certainly not one that would have gotten through the gauntlet in the Western Conference, let alone beaten whomever would have come out of the East. So this is a Golden State team that... I'm not saying that they underperform, but they certainly underwhelm, I think, compared from what they did, which was win 67 games one year and then break the 96 Bulls record and win 73 the next. Those definitely do not happen. I think other things too, though. Steph last year doesn't hit 400 threes without Draymond and without Klay Thompson. It just doesn't happen. Nor does he win back-to-back MVPs. In fact, I think because he and Klay aren't there, Draymond that is, Steph actually regresses. I mean, we've seen players be burdened by huge workloads offensively, which I think is definitely what would have happened. I think Kevin Love, while a solid interior player, we're never going to see that Kevin Love that averaged, 25 and 12 when he was in his heyday in Minnesota. It's not sort of the same environment in terms of how many touches you're going to get, what the focal point of the offense is going to be. I have a hard time believing that Steve Kerr would have, wanted to really give Kevin Love the low block, give the ball on the low block and let him go to work. I think it still would have been an inside-out, pass-heavy offense, and I don't think that is one that would have allowed Kevin Love to be much more than a spot-up shooter, which is essentially what he was in Cleveland. And I think, honestly, the Dubs blow it up after another early exit in last year's playoffs. I think, like, what we saw is a little different, right? Because them sort of dealing away pieces after acquiring Kevin Durant this past offseason is a little different from, you know, Joe Lacob, you know, really blowing it up because things aren't working. But I think no matter what, those pieces are still having to be replaced because the way that I see it, I see Steph progressing. I see the ankle injuries becoming more and more of a problem as he plays more and more minutes each night to try to, you know, dig out a franchise that now has traded for an all-star, has had high expectations, and is underperforming, I think, from what people would have expected.
So you don't think Steph becomes a cultural icon?
I do not think Steph becomes a cultural icon. And more to the point, this is what I was just about to get into, we never get the Curry Lows. Those Nurse tennis shoes, the ones that are perhaps most popularized by undercover police officers, those shoes we never get. It's never a joke on Twitter. We totally miss that. It does not, you know, get added to the social media lexicon among the great memes like the crying Jordan meme or any of the other like great memes on Twitter. That never happens.
Tea lizard.
Right.
You know, my favorite thing that came out a little bit over the summer when there was some article on ESPN about Steph having finally watched the finals and the nugget that he was planning on wearing those damn things for like game four of the NBA finals. Can you even imagine if that had happened? That's a counterfactual we got to explore next time. Is what if Steph had worn the Curry Lows in a game?
I mean, I think you could at least make the argument that he couldn't have been worse, right?
I don't know what the legal term is. I guess I don't know if it's a redirect or whatever. But when you say,
yeah, let's go for it. It's a redirect. There we go.
It's a redirect. That's what it is. It's my question. When you say blow it up. And that'd be this summer 2016. So instead of signing Durant, they're blowing it up. You think they're trading Steph, they're trading Kevin Love, they're trading both, neither? Like, what does blow it up mean to you?
I think they get rid of Love, and I also think all of the same pieces that were so integral to the title run in 2015, guys like Iguodala, Barbosa, Harrison Barnes, I think all those guys are gone. I think there's a good chance that Bogut is gone, too. I think really what you have is them trying to keep together those two pieces and Steph and Love. I also think, like, maybe you start thinking about trading Steph. I think, like, again, he regresses to a point at which he's no longer – he's not back-to-back MVPs, certainly not is not unanimous MVP like he was last year. So I think there's a good chance that really you could end up – and I think it's harder to predict because we haven't lived 2017, 2018 – but I think there's a really good chance that Kevin Love ends up being the last guy standing on a team that would have been populated by Steph and Clay and Draymond and the whole sort of strength in numbers juggernaut that we've gotten used to.
See, I think I think that the biggest takeaway here is, and another alternate timeline we'll have to explore, is we would have really missed out on learning about how much Draymond loves kicking people in the dick. Like, instead of being like a great basketball player who also kicks people in the dick, he's just like a basketball player.
And it's hard to kick people on the dick when you're tied to the bench.
That's such a big part of his legacy now. I'll just note, none of you talked about this, but I feel like if you're gonna destroy Draymond like this, it really affects the Olympic team this year. But that's a whole other question. Mr. Johnson, I want to direct you, because I know that Sam has points he wants to make about the Wolves and the Cavs. I want to ask that you have some sort of ancillary effects that you have here for some other teams. What do you think this does to the Wizards?
Okay, so I'm glad you brought this up. I would be remiss if I didn't throw in the hometown Wizards in this alternate sort of speculative timeline. The biggest thing here is that I think because you now have this hole in the Western Conference that I think is going to be filled with by teams like the Clippers and also the Thunder. I have the Clippers winning the title in 2015, right? And the next year I have the Thunder winning it. So this past year,
all right,
it's not LeBron, right? And right, so there's no more tears.
Wouldn't be an episode
Sam.
Of Basketball Court without the Thunder winning a title.
That's what the show really revolves around, if you ask me.
I think the takeaway is that really the only situation in which, like, there's no timeline in which the Thunder haven't won a title except the one we're in right now. Right?
That's so devastating.
That's the only possible takeaway from four episodes.
You're ruining my night.
But okay, but what's funny is, like, if we were recording this podcast in the early 90s, we would have the same types of discussion, but instead of it being the Thunder, it would have been the Orlando Magic. The Thunder were a team that was so close in so many different places. They got bit by the injury bug like 4 years in a row, and they, you know, were, what, 7 points away from sweeping the Heat in the 2012 finals. I mean, this is a team that's been right on the precipice each time. If you change anything, which is kind of the whole idea of this show, it's really hard to deny the Thunder a title. So I have them winning last year too, because again, they were up 3-1 in the Western Conference Finals, right, against a team that would have had all these pieces. That,
yeah, they were up 3-1 in the Western Conference Finals. Do you remember when they were up 3-1 in the Western Conference Finals? I remember when they were up 3-1 in the Western Conference Finals.
I remember that too. And I remember
a guy...
And I remember it was funny too, a guy who actually would in this timeline be playing for Minnesota ended up dashing their finals hopes. So that doesn't happen. Right, because Clay's in Minnesota and
yeah,
not
so, but
in.
So you think that the Thunder winning helps the Wizards?
I am not saying that it necessarily helps the Wizards. No, because I don't think that there is ever a timeline in which good things happen to the Washington franchise. But what I do think is that there's no KD to DC movement, and I think the one silver lining here is that, in reality, right now, John Wall is really not happy with Wizards fans. Understandably, because we spent multiple seasons rooting against the team so that they could tank to get a superstar that was never going to come here in the first place. And if you're the face of the franchise, that's kind of going to rub you the wrong way. I don't think that that happens. And I think, ironically, that could be good for the Wizards, right? Because it doesn't mean that what is going to happen the next time that John Wall is a free agent, which is that he's going to bolt very quickly, I don't think that necessarily happens. I think the bad thing, though, is that we don't, in an attempt to lure Kevin Durant here, we don't bring in Scott Brooks, and we're stuck with Randy Whitman. And I think that is maybe the saddest sentence I've ever uttered. I think it's definitely the worst thing I've ever said on this show. So I think, again, it's mostly bad for the Wizards. So the one, again, one good takeaway is that John Wall is going to leave the next time he has an opportunity, and I think if there is no pining for Kevin Durant, that maybe doesn't happen.
Okay, so
can I make one objection here? Because Yes. This is sort of implying that the whole KD to DC thing just started this summer out of nowhere. Like, this has been going on for, what, 3 or 4 years now? Like, you can't just pretend that the whole thing hasn't been, you know, even if it's just in the shady corners of basketball Twitter, like some sort of movement that's been rising up, and, you know, it hit a big crescendo this year, at the start of this year, because people thought the Wizards would be good and that KD could leave, and that sort of went away. But, you know, even if the Thunder won a title this year, like, you'd still have Wizards people thinking, like, oh, he won for OKC, now he's going to come home.
The only problem with that, do I go to counter-object?
Yeah, you get two sentences, then I rule.
Okay, word. So the one thing that I would say to that is there's a difference, there's a fundamental difference between idiots like me on Twitter wanting Kevin Durant to come home and the Wizards as an organization doing things like hiring his old high school coaches, bringing in guys like Scott Brooks, and really making a concerted effort to make him feel more comfortable were he to sign here. Like, those two are very different.
Well, I mean, I'm going to rule with Miles on this because for one, Scott Brooks is probably still coaching the Thunder if they win the 2015 title. But also, yeah, I think the rationale for KD leaving goes away the second the Thunder win a title. So I'm going to let that stand. And then I want to direct Miles to... I want to get this discussion about the Clippers out, because I know Sam has more to say about the Warriors and the Cavs and the Timberwolves. But I want to get the Clippers... your Clippers bit out into the world where we can laugh at it, and then I'm going to flip it over to Sam to have him run the rest of this.
Word. So really quick, Clippers win the title. Sports, which are incredibly narrative-driven, that winning the title gets immediately juxtaposed with Adam Silver banning Donald Sterling. The Clippers are now seen as this very progressive institution that, as soon as they abolished racism, prosperity followed. Doc Rivers.
We all know that racism can be abolished. That's how it works. You just, whoosh, it's gone.
Yeah, that's what happened, right? You took out Donald Sterling. There's no more racism, and then here come all the rings. But that also means, and this is perhaps my favorite part, is that DeAndre Jordan doesn't get barricaded in his own living room. There's no all that crazy night of free agency with the Chandler Parsons tweet and the Mark Cuban Snapchats of him driving around downtown Dallas and them literally locking DeAndre Jordan in his own house. That never happens, which is terrible because that remains to me one of the most incredible nights in league history as far as free agency is concerned. But I think more sort of substantially, with Kobe Bryant sort of retiring and his final sort of farewell season, that all still happens, but I think what happens with the Clippers winning is that there's more of an emphasis placed on this sort of new legacy, this new sort of rising basketball powerhouse in Los Angeles. You know, you have celebrity fans like Kendrick Lamar and Kanye West, who would have been notorious Laker fans and, you know, have been devout Laker fans, kind of see them start switching over, performing in Blake Griffin jerseys on the road and concerts and stuff. And Blake Griffin, too, speaking of people who, like, really come out winners in this, he definitely benefits from some newfound fame. I have him getting a Funny or Die, like, spinoff web series, and really does kind of cement himself as, like, the NBA's, like, new kind of funny guy. Certainly to the sort of same scale that maybe nobody had seen since Shaq retired. He's like now the like face of like, hey, I'm personable and I'm funny and you know, wholesome and kids love me, that type of like NBA guy. They might make a Kazam 2 movie starring him. It's really, really good come up for Blake.
Would he have his own really ugly shoe?
He would have his own really ugly shoe, yeah. It wouldn't be the same logo with Shaq dunking. It might be the same thing, but with a little car underneath it. You know, it would be really just hideous. But he'd be cooking. He'd be living. It'd be a Kia brand shoe.
Right. You know, these big conglomerates, they can make anything if you tell them to. You know, they just
Blake Griffin Kia 3s dropping this summer.
They take the leather that they use to make a Kia Sorento, and they just make these little shoes with them. I think that's a great one.
Right.
All right.
Yeah, so that's my Clippers take.
I like it. All right. Your time is up, and we're going to give and so this just so you guys out there in the listening world know, I make Miles and Sam send me little briefs of like what they're going to talk about. And so I know that there's stuff that Miles has not talked about. And what I'm going to do is if Sam's talking about a team and you want to say something went the other way and you have a disagreement, just make an objection. We'll talk about it then. But let's flip it over. Sam, you now have the floor to make your arguments about the Kevin Love, Klay Thompson trade that never was.
Sure. My first and sort of overarching...
You're supposed to start with, thank you, Your Honor.
Okay. Thank you, Your Honor, and thank
you,
opposing counsel.
Without that tone.
Yeah. Thank you, Your Honor. And now, for Sam's argument, my sort of overarching theme is if this trade happens, pretty much everyone in the league is just kind of miserable. And we're going to start with the Warriors. And like Miles said, if this trade happens, Draymond's career goes in a completely different direction because he's buried pretty much behind Kevin Love and Andrew Bogut, two guys who, you know, can do a lot of – who I think would actually be a pretty good pair together because of what they can provide, Bogut sort of covering for him defensively and Love being more the offensive player. And Draymond sort of gets left behind as like a third big and probably ends up getting traded that season or – the next offseason when he's a free agent and some sort of sign-in trade or leaves as a restricted free agent. And if this trade goes through also, there is no death lineup, of course, as we know it, because Draymond is tied to the bench. He's not really going to be a small ball five that much. You know, Kerr, I think, is a really good coach and probably discovers him and plays him in some minutes to make him great, but there's certainly no death lineup in its current iteration because Klay Thompson's gone. And I think I have more faith in Kerr than I think Miles does, and I think that he'd find a way to use Kevin Love more like he was in Minnesota than like how Cleveland's pretty much using him as a stand-in-the-corner spot-up shooter, and that a Curry-Kevin Love pick-and-roll would be pretty interesting to watch offensively, even if on the other side of the ball, it probably gets torn apart like a sieve more often than not. So the Warriors lose a big perimeter defender also, and they replace Klay Thompson with Kevin Martin, who I had to watch as sixth man for a season in Oklahoma City, and I can say many not-so-great things about his defensive abilities, though he is a great scorer and is one of the best guys at getting fouled in the league and getting to the line. So where does that leave us? Miles has this sort of horrible dystopian future with the Clippers winning a championship, and I think that the Clippers don't win a championship because, well, in reality, they lost to the Rockets in the playoffs anyway. I think the door opens for something even more horrific, which is a James Harden-Dwight Howard NBA Finals and perhaps even NBA Championship in 2015.
So you're saying the Rockets are actually the real beneficiary of the failed Warriors?
I think specifically James Harden and Dwight Howard's legacies are the winners in this. Because even if they don't necessarily win the Finals, which I'd get to in a minute, I think the fact that they would make a Finals, Dwight would make one after the way he left Orlando and L.A., Harden after the way he left Oklahoma City, it's a huge plus for their legacies, and it sort of leaves the rest of the West in sort of a haze. Like, did we really just let that team get to an NBA Finals? And I think that is possibly even the more likely result, even with the Warriors, the way they were constructed. You take Draymond's minutes, you know, mostly deplete them, and you take Klay Thompson off the team and replace him with Kevin Martin. I think that there's a really good shot, if they met in the playoffs, that the Rockets are the team advancing instead of the Warriors winning in five.
All right, so Miles, do you have anything that you want to say about that?
Yeah, I have a question just about the Kerr being able to implement Love as he was in Minnesota. I'm looking at, that. I guess it was 2010, 2011 season where he was averaging like 20 and 15, 26 and 13. On those Minnesota teams, like, he was pretty much by himself. And I guess just in terms of personnel, how does that work sharing the ball with Steph and with guys like, because Harrison Barnes is still going to be there. Guys like Iguodala is also pretty ball heavy. And Sean Livingston is also pretty ball dominant when those guys are on the bench. How does that work with Kevin Love just getting the number of touches to match? I mean, because even on this Minnesota team where he averaged 26 and 13, the center that was there with him was Darko Milicic, right? So nobody's really necessarily worried about getting him touches. And I should say NBA champion Darko Milicic. How does that work? Because I also would like to believe in Steve Kerr, but I just don't see it.
I don't think getting touches is really an issue. I mean, Game 7 in the Finals, their first two plays were hook shots for Festus Ezeli. I mean, if they really want someone to get shots, he's going to get shots off. And especially the way their offense flows, and if you sort of make Kevin Martin more of the spot-up guy, like he has been when he's at his best in his career, and you sort of let Steph create or Steph and Love running a pick and roll or a pick and pop, I think that's a lot more deadly even than just sort of dumping it to Love on the low block and letting him try to go to work when someone tries to double him. I still think there's a open offense for the Warriors. I just, like you said, I don't think it's a 67-win team. It might not even be the one seed that year in the West.
All right, so we've been talking a lot about the Warriors. Another side to this trade. Klay Thompson is going to the frozen north. Does it work out for Minnesota? I mean,
no.
Nothing ever works out for Minnesota. So
no, just like nothing ever works out for the Clippers, Miles, nothing works out for Minnesota. And part of this trade would have had to go down before the draft. And so that means the Timberwolves don't also get the number one pick in that draft from Cleveland, who ended up being Andrew Wiggins, of course. They end up with Klay Thompson and Zach LaVine and sort of a gaping mess in the front court. But Klay's a pretty talented guy. LaVine had a good rookie year. I don't think that Warriors team is the worst team in the NBA. Like, they ended up being in real life when they traded Love and just sort of threw Wiggins out there to run the team by himself with LaVine. So it's a team that ends up with 6th or 7th pick instead of the 1 pick. So instead of Wiggins and LaVine and Towns like they have in real life, there's no Wiggins. There's no Towns. There's someone pretty good, because when Towns came out, it was a pretty stacked draft class. But you don't have those guys. Tibbs doesn't come coach the team. And it's just sort of a wasteland for Minnesota, where they have one really talented guy and a couple other decent rookies, and then nothing else. There's certainly not the hope that has begun to spring with the Minnesota Timberwolves, at least this summer, going forward. And because Wiggins isn't there, that means Wiggins is still in Cleveland, because the Cavs don't trade their number one pick for Kevin Love. So they have a team of Kyrie and Wiggins to go along with the legend Dion Waiters and Tristan Thompson, and that's it. So what does that mean for Cleveland? It means LeBron doesn't come back. LeBron stays in Miami, because we all know that the only reason LeBron came back to Cleveland is because there was another younger big three, healthier big three, with Kyrie and Kevin Love instead of the one he was leaving with Dwayne Wade and Chris Bosh. So he sticks out in Miami for another year. And if you remember what ended up happening to Miami Heat in 2015, that's when Wade was hurt all season, Bosh was done because of the blood clots, and LeBron essentially has to carry the team by himself to get to the finals against Houston, if he can make it there, and if Houston makes it there. And you sort of have this finals where LeBron has to recreate what he actually did in the 2015 finals when Kyrie got hurt and Kevin Love got hurt. And so it sort of adds to his legacy that way, especially if he wins against a Houston team that doesn't really have the legacy of the 67 or even the 73 win Warriors, but still would be seen as an incredibly impressive feat by LeBron. And then, of course, if he wins the finals in Miami, he's probably not leaving for Cleveland the next year anyway. So the Cavs end up with a middle-of-the-first-round draft pick. They add maybe Justice Winslow. And so you have this weird team of Kyrie and Wiggins and Winslow, or maybe they go with one of the bigs that year, Frank Kaminsky even. And the Cavs are sort of the team that has the young, trendy pick label that the Timberwolves have now, but they don't have a ring and they don't have LeBron coming home, and everyone still wants to burn his jersey.
So what you're saying is that this trade worked out great for everyone, basically. If you... no, the actual trade that happened, Kevin Love.
The actual trade, I think, worked out well for everyone. It worked out for the Warriors by not making the trade, because they won a championship and they were up 3-1 in the second one. I don't know what happened after that. The Timberwolves end up with back-to-back number one overall picks and another lottery pick and a top five, top 10 head coach who's ready to try to bring it all together. The Cavs end up convincing LeBron to come home, building a super team, winning maybe the best NBA finals of our generation. Everyone's happy.
So I got to ask Miles, do you think that what Sam says about the Wolves and the Cavs holds up?
Oh, no. I think more or less he's on the right track. I am not convinced that the addition of Klay Thompson and David Lee alone have the Wolves winning many more games than the 16 they won in 2014. And I still have them drafting Towns in 2015. I think the biggest thing here, though, is Andrew Wiggins. That trade that did happen wouldn't happen in this one. I think there are some casualties, if you will. One, I agree that LeBron doesn't come back when he came back. I think he does come back to Cleveland, because I think Andrew Wiggins, who averaged 17 points a game in his rookie season on a Timberwolves team that didn't have Towns, that his main point guard, I guess, would have been Ricky Rubio at that point, playing alongside Kyrie Irving, means that Andrew Wiggins, I think we see him have more of a season that people are comparing to Kobe Bryant's rookie season. I also think there are some other, perhaps unintended, casualties here. A draft pick, because in that trade that would have sent Wiggins to Minnesota, other people that were also sent, Anthony Bennett gets sent to Minnesota as well, as do a draft pick that ended up being Timothy Luwawu-Cabarrot to the Sixers. Thaddeus Young ends up still in Philadelphia as well. I'm not quite sure how the judge feels about that, but
they would have traded that some one way or another. Hinkie would have traded him for like 8 first round picks from the Kings if he had had the chance.
But with LeBron not coming home, there's the one other thing with LeBron not coming home is we don't have the I'm coming home Sports Illustrated cover. We don't have the story with Lee Jenkins. We don't have the narrative. There's still no goodwill around LeBron that he's still this hated character because he went to Miami and didn't come back. And the only player who has come home and has stayed home is Carmelo Anthony. Wow. How's that for an alternate timeline?
It's terrible, partly because Carmelo Anthony would have to come and play for the Wizards for that coming home to actually be a thing that were true. But I think, again, LeBron does come back to Cleveland. I just think he doesn't come when he did. I think he stays in Miami for an extra year, which also has to remember, I'm not... Well, first of all, the injuries still hold up, right? So you still have Chris Bosh and all of his ailments. I think, more importantly, though, I'm not convinced that all of the behind-the-scenes drama between Pat Riley and Dwayne Wade gets fixed. I think that makes it for a really tumultuous couple of seasons for LeBron in Miami. He and Dwayne Wade are best friends. Pat Riley is now public enemy number one, and I think it's much harder to force him out than for LeBron to just leave for a team that has Kyrie Irving and a really, really good Andrew Wiggins playing the two. I think there is still that promise of a big three, and I think more than that, LeBron has proven that he's kind of just a sappy, sentimental dude that likes the idea of being able to quote-unquote come home to Cleveland. I think that I don't think you get the Lee Jenkins spot. I think instead it's a Players Tribune feature. I think he definitely Deputy West Coast Editor
LeBron James or whatever. Deputy Publisher. What title would he have?
If LeBron wins a ring, another one in Miami, if he beats Houston or the Clippers or the Warriors
I don't think that he beats LA in that last series. I don't think if Miami gets to the finals against
I don't think LA gets past Houston because they didn't in real life.
I don't think that happens. Like, this is the alternate timeline I've constructed. Like, I don't think that that happens. I think the Clippers, first of all, I think they have the number one seed in the West. I don't think they play Houston to begin with. I mean, so.
Well, let me.
Because this is all make believe, Sam.
It's real to me, damn it.
Well, let me posit something just because you said the thing about Melo, you know. If you play this out for a second, you say Minnesota is not the worst team in the league, then the Knicks might pick at 3 instead of 4. The Knicks end up with Jahlil Okafor instead of Kristaps.
Would the Knicks end up at 1 if they had the worst record and they get that lottery ball?
Would they have?
But nothing good ever happens to
Melo and so Karl Towns.
I was going to say the Knicks were actually helped by this trade too. I just want them. I just want Kristaps to be not on the Knicks anymore. I don't like Knicks fans being happy. Are they ever happy, though?
I don't think you have to worry about that.
I don't think they ever are.
That's fair enough. One of my roommates is actually a Knicks fan, and he's never happy, so that makes sense. All right. Does anyone have any sort of final points that they feel need to be drawn out before I make the ruling here?
I have one closing point that I want to make, because it is...
Oh, you haven't even talked about the Thunder yet, so like...
Because... There's one thing that we left out, and it's the Oklahoma City Thunder winning a championship because Draymond isn't there to kick people's penises, and Klay Thompson isn't there to go supernova in Game 6 and make me walk around the Upper West Side for 2 hours in just sort of a fugue state. So the Thunder go to the finals and win, and Durant signs a 1-year deal, and now it sets up for him and Westbrook to sign long-term deals together or leave at the same time, but no one's as upset about that anymore because they finally won.
Let me just rewind for a second.
Yeah.
I want everyone to take the mental image of Sam Tidings furiously wandering around the Upper West Side at like...
That's what, definitely autobiographical. Like you definitely did that.
I was in a bad space. I was in a very bad personal space.
I know this definitely happened. Like
it did. I think I was... texting you guys in an extremely sober state as I wandered around like in the 90s.
Like in the streets, not the years.
No, I got in a time machine, Miles. Yes, the streets.
Well, there's some good stuff. There's some good stuff in the Upper West Side in the 90s, like some late night diners. You go to that, walk down to that one movie theater.
I couldn't eat. I couldn't keep anything down. It was It was rough.
The only time that I ever did that was the Paul Pierce buzzer beater. What was that, 2 years ago that got called back?
That was amazing.
Fingertips.
That was
also some Upper West Side walking that happened.
The Upper West Side is a beautiful place to walk around after you've suffered a devastating basketball defeat for everybody.
It is one of the great things about being a Sixers fan is that I never suffer any horrible basketball defeats. You know, the only thing that ever came close was the Columbia Harvard game in 2014. But
oh no,
that's really not
the Valentine's Day massacre.
The Valentine's Day massacre. That's a reference that our listeners will definitely get.
Both of them.
All right. Well, that puts the cap on argument. So now I'm gonna make a ruling. Look, I actually think this is really fascinating because you do have the rare example of pretty much every team is better off today because they did not pull this trade, right? Like, you know, the Warriors need Klay to become the Warriors. The Cavs, you know, need Kevin Love's availability to become LeBron and the Cavs. And so I guess the only teams that don't really get helped out by this are like the Clippers and the Rockets. And so I do think that the winner here today for his vision of an alternate universe where the Clippers have won the whole thing is
bang,
Miles.
Bang.
Miles
bang, bang.
Takes the crown back from Sam. Summary judgment is in his favor.
So Miles has a 3-1 lead now. This is perfect. This is setting me up for redemption.
That's great.
I couldn't be happier with the result, honestly.
No one calls Steve Kerr. No one calls Steve Kerr. And I am actually just glad that we've figured out that this podcast isn't an actual court. It's just like, how many different ways could we get the Thunder to win the 2015 or 16 title? I'm just glad we focused in on our real mission.
And we haven't even done the Harden trade yet. Like, we haven't done the one thing that directly affects the Thunder winning titles outside of the Durant thing.
Well, that's going to be the one where we don't focus on the Thunder. Yeah. Right? That's going to be the one episode where everything else gets talked about.
That's the one where the Rockets end up getting a three-peat somehow out of nowhere.
We should definitely have we should do one episode where it's just like, if you talk about the Thunder, you automatically lose. We'll just see how it goes. All right. Well, so I think that puts a cap on basketball court. Miles, is there anything you'd like to say, having the win?
Honestly, I'm just glad to be back. It's been a long hiatus. This is always really fun, and I'm glad that once again we were able to give Kevin Durant a championship.
Unlike the one he does not have in real life. Well, that'll just about do it for this episode of Basketball Court. Thank you to Sam and Miles for, as always, putting their stuff together. And coming up with some really fascinating insights. We'll be back at some point. Look, there's just because of the way our lives are, we live in three different cities on two different time zones and are in various stages of employment and school. I don't know what the best way to say
it's
that
so
is.
Real out here. Yeah.
Yeah. it's going to be irregular, but if you subscribe to the podcast, you can hit us up on iTunes. Our website is basketballcourt.podomatic.com, but that's just a feed of our episodes. You can also follow us on Twitter. Sam, what is our Twitter handle?
It is at bballcourtpod.
That's right, at bballcourtpod. And you can send us an email if you have real complaints at basketballcourtpodcast@gmail.com. And like us on Facebook, there's the Basketball Court Podcast. You have to be careful. There are a lot of basketball courts out there in the world, but we are the only basketball court. I don't think the emphasis really changes that.
That's deep. That's really deep.
I'm so lost.
All right, we'll be back sometime soon. Thanks everyone for listening. Court's adjourned.